G'day everyone, and welcome to another episode of Free Kick, the AFLW Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, Will, and I am joined today by expert commentator, Mel. How's it going, Mel?
I am very well, but I feel like you've set me up to fail with that intro. But how are you?
I'm very well, and you are our expert analyst, so I'm very excited to be here with you to talk the Sydney Swans, who were the real surprise packet of Season 8.
Yes, this is a fascinating team to talk about, given they came last in their debut season, and then in just their second season, they made it to finals. So they're definitely the breakout of the expansion clubs, much to the dismay of Jono and Liam as Hawks and Bombers supporters. So the Swans finished 8th after 6 wins and 4 losses. Yeah, they won their first final as well, but then they lost in the semi-finals. But overall, a great performance from Sydney and makes us really excited about what we're going to be able to see from them this season.
Yes, like Sydney last year really came out firing. A lot of that was to do with their really excellent recruiting. As a result, they've actually been a bit more quiet this year when it comes to the ins and outs. But Mel, who have they got in?
Yeah, so they've traded in Kiara Hillier coming in as a defender from Brisbane and Giselle Davies coming in as a ruck forward from the Gold Coast. Both of these are at baseman price, which is exciting to see. And they've also drafted Sarah Grundon, pick 16, Laura Hausiger, pick 33, and Holly Cooper coming in as a pre-listing.
Yeah, those two are really interesting ins from the trade perspective because they're both players that sort of struggled to get game time at their respective clubs up in Queensland, but they're coming into a Sydney team that's probably a lot stronger than we expected. So what roles they play will be really interesting.
And these ins come with the outs of Alicia Newman, a small forward who's moved over to GWS, and quite a few delistings here. We've got Jade Anthony, Kiara Beasley, Sarah Ford, Jenny Higgins, Bridie Kennedy, and Kate Reynolds.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that's to do with Sydney now have to cut their list numbers back a bit. Coming back from the expansion where they had more list spots, and now coming back towards the regular size. But yeah, they haven't really lost too many best 21 players, and they've added a bit of depth, so it's quite exciting. But as we said, a big part of the reason they were so successful last year was their recruiting, and there really wasn't many more exciting from both an on-field perspective and from a fantasy perspective as Season 8 superstar Laura Gardner, and we have had the absolute privilege to sit down for a chat with her. Liam was very, very excited for this one. It's an absolute cracker. Sit around, listen, and we'll have our fantasy analysis straight afterwards.
Thanks for the throw there. And yes, I am very ably, and we're very also excited to have her on the podcast. We've got as our interview for Sydney, Laura Gardner, first time All-Australian last year. Laura, how are you going?
Good, thanks. I'm good.
How is it coming, you know, how's it been, you know, the first month or so of pre-season now after what seems like it should have been a pretty normal off-season for you compared to the last few seasons?
Yeah, well, coming up to Sydney, and I spent most of my off-season in Sydney. So that was good to spend more time around the girls. And then we had like our little pre-season where we played a couple of the games in the VFL, which was good, especially for the new girls to give them a go and a run around in an AFLW side. And then, yeah, we've started pre-season and we're about just over half, yeah, pretty much over halfway. So I think we've got a couple weeks until our first little hit out, which will be good. But yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I can imagine that those VFLW games, particularly for the Sydney teams, were vital, just not having that same level of second competition. Yeah, I'd be shocked if there wasn't some kind of improvement. But like you said, those younger players getting the opportunity to play a bank of like four or five games this year.
Yeah, it's really good. It gives like everyone a chance to kind of have a go at playing. And I think it's good for just like the structure-wise of our kind of team. Like we have certain plays and that which are hard to learn just by, you know, getting told or at training. It's probably when you're out there playing where they most come into play, so it's good for like the new girls and the younger ones to be able to have that, even me, for a refresher of how we want to play our brand of footy. It's really good to have that opportunity. So yeah,
It's probably even an advantage for Sydney and GWS this year because you guys probably had a lot more players coming through in that pre-season than a lot of the established Melbourne clubs who might have a handful. Most teams had maybe five or six per week in that first block, whereas you guys had two-thirds of your AFLW list playing in each of those games.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's really important as well just for like that bonding on the field because, you know, you bond at training, but you only really have, I think it's like 12 weeks of pre-season. So it's good that we had that little extra block where we trained together and then we ended up getting a few games on the back of that, which was good.
Yeah. Well, I'll have a few questions about some of the players and let me just say having extra stats from some of the newer players from those AFLW games is vital. I just want to go back to something you mentioned at the start, which is kind of moving up to Sydney. Before you came from Geelong, you played Geelong Falcons, Geelong area as a junior. You played a lot of Geelong VFLW games and you obviously played for the Geelong Cats as well. What was it like kind of moving up to Sydney, having spent so much of your footy career and your sporting career like really close to home?
Yeah, well, obviously getting picked up by Geelong and being a Geelong girl, it was just pretty like easy. Like I didn't really know any different. It was just down the road from where I lived. So, yeah, it kind of just felt like you had your footy and then you had your outside life. And then when I moved up to Sydney, it was like I kind of was here for footy. So it was more like that, I don't know, it felt more like exciting. It was like a new kind of challenge and I knew that I really wanted to make the most of it and I probably only had one opportunity to kind of prove myself. And I think coming to Sydney, they really made me feel comfortable here and they backed me. And, yeah, I just wanted to do what I could to add my value to the team.
Yeah, well, you say you had one opportunity. I think you can comfortably say that you've nailed it, given that you've gone from, you know, failing to probably get as much midfield time as you'd like at Geelong after having dominated in the VFLW to getting full-time midfield role, 22 under 22 and an All-Australian spot. Have you taken a second this off-season to really evaluate, like, what an awesome first season at Sydney you had last year?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was very, well, I think each game I kind of shocked myself because I didn't really know what, like, you know, I didn't know that I could do what I was doing. But yeah, it was, I think it wasn't like just me alone. Like if it wasn't for, you know, Scott and Nick Davis, our midfield coach, like I wouldn't have been in the position I am. And I think they definitely put the support into me and backed me and saw potential. And I'm like, I can't thank them enough. And, you know, like Kate, our GM, like just making me feel like I, you know, was at home and that like I was really wanted here. And I think that's the most important thing. And then like with the girls as well, like they just all like backed me and like supported me and gave me that confidence to kind of be the player that I was. And I think that's super important when you come to a new team, especially because it can be a bit like confronting because you don't know many of the girls, but they made me feel right at home straight away.
Yeah. And you'll be happy to know that it wasn't just your coaches who were backing you. We had two interviews with Sydney players last year. So one with Chloe Malloy and one with Lauren Zaghetti. They both backed you into be the biggest breakout player after having seen you in the preseason. So it wasn't just your coaches who thought you were going to do well, and we're glad to see that that's what happened. Just talking about Scott and the coaching team, that was a massive season for Sydney after failing to win a game in the first season to winning a final in your first finals appearance. Kind of, I'm sure that was a pretty exciting experience for you in your first year in the team. What are the internal expectations this year for where this squad can go?
Yeah, so I think it's kind of still building on, obviously, from last year. We like to look at this year as a new challenge because we have a different fixture. And yes, last year was like we had some good success and we also had some losses where we still want to look to improve on. And we do reflect on last year, but I think it's just focusing on this year. And I think we're more looking at it as kind of like blocks. So we're not looking at the whole season ahead of us as a whole. We're kind of looking at it as, you know, maybe 3 week chunks, and we're just focusing on what's ahead for those 3 weeks. So like, because it can get pretty overwhelming when you look ahead and, you know, you see the teams that are coming up. So I think if we really just focus in on, you know, those 3 weeks, whether that's just training and then the games that we have and just kind of controlling what we can control, and hopefully that we can improve and have a really good result this season as well.
Yeah, look, I don't think fans of the club would be surprised if we saw some similar results. And if we're going to talk about this season, I wanted to have a quick chat to you about the kind of midfield group from last year and then what it might look like this year. So last year Sydney debuted a basically completely new midfield group. So they've got Badiou there. They had Tanya Kennedy, Kai Malloy, and then Ali Morfitt kind of broke out as a superstar. Is that the same midfield spread that we can expect this year, or are we going to see a bit of a few different injections in there? So Sophia Hurley or Montana Ham or anyone else that you can name. I'll be very curious to see kind of what the expectation is kind of at the start of the middle of the preseason.
Yeah, I think with our team especially, like you see a lot of the other teams and they have their kind of, you know, three or four midfielders that play there kind of consistently each week. And I think we do have a couple players like that at the Swans, which will spend most of their time in there. But there's also, we have kind of the ability to throw a lot of people through there. Like we have heaps of players that go through there and match sims and pracky matches and even in the VFL series. So I think that's a strength of ours. Like we do have, you know, Monham and Soph, as you said, and even Cynthia through there. So she can come in through there. So we have like such a wide range of girls that can spin through there. Like if we come up against a side that, you know, they might be a lot more physical and stronger. We do have the ability to put girls in there that's better off that suit. Like we've got Monham, who is super strong and she can go through there, you know, in the centre bounces. You've also got Chi. So I think it gives us that flexibility to be able to, you know, change things up as we come. But we do have like the girls that will probably play more minutes in there compared to other girls. But that will just come down to probably game day and the, you know, who we come up against pretty much.
Sounds extremely reasonable and interesting couple of names there. I didn't have Cynthia Hurley as a name that I explicitly expected to go in the midfield this year, but I know that she was a pretty gun junior. And really backed up some disposals. So that'll be very exciting for us to watch then. If we're going to talk about kind of newer players, not a massive draft haul for Sydney this past season, but there were all three of them played VFLW games this year. So we've got Sarah Grunden, Laura Hausegger, and Holly Cooper. If you're going to pick one of those who was going to make like an impact, the kind of quickest, earliest impact, and actually play like best 21 team round one, who would it be?
Yeah, I think that's very hard because they're all very different players. But
I've really put you on the spot there.
Pretty different positions. Yeah, no, that's okay. I think if you're looking more probably, that's very hard. I'd say it kind of depends what you're looking at because there are very different players. Like you have girls that play at different ends of the field. But yeah. I do think Sarah Grunden could have impact, you know, on the scoreboard and that with position. But then she's also got the ability to play in other positions. So it's very hard. I think until you play a couple games and they kind of cement in a spot, then you probably don't really know. But you've also got Lara who plays like she's a tall and she plays great down back. And then you've got like Holly, who's, you know, got this crazy speed. So it's also, you know, kind of comes down to where they play. And yeah, it's kind of hard to answer that question.
But no, you've dodged answering that question with absolute perfection. I cannot fault you whatsoever. It was a tough one. And like I was doing my research and my kind of watching of highlights and tape. It was.
If they played in similar
difficult
positions, it might be easier to answer. But yeah,
that's extremely fair, and particularly for Sarah and Holly, both were kind of midfielders as underages, but then also played some time forward and bring a lot of different things. So yeah, we're definitely keen to see how it goes, and I can appreciate that it's not an easy question to answer. Another one then that might be a little bit easier. I'd have said that kind of looking at the players that left Sydney from last year, probably the biggest impact was Alicia Newman, who played a pretty vital role as that speed small forward. If you're going to pick someone to replace Alicia's role kind of in the team currently or a new player, who would it be? So I had kind of listed here maybe Cynthia Hamilton and Chloe Malloy might spend some more time forward. I know that Montana Berylson also rode for the forward line at times last year. Is there any one person you'd say is most likely to?
I think with, obviously Alicia leaving, like it was, she's obviously had that role as that kind of small forward and I think we all miss her very much. But, she's obviously moved on and she's happy at the Giants. So now we've kind of got that kind of small forward position, which we do have players that, you know, go through there, and you've had Chloe that played a bit of the back season down in that forward position, and obviously you had Cynthia who was down there as well. But I think there's still kind of that small forward role, which Montana did play a bit of. She's very quick, so that was kind of a good position for her, and she's obviously still plays down there, which is good. And then you've kind of got some of the new girls like Holly, and you've got even got Sarah who can go down there. So I think it will just be probably we've got pretty much anyone that can go through that role. It'll probably come down to on the day as well, like kind of who we're playing. If they've got a quick back line, we'll probably put in, you know, your quicker players. And then, yeah, I think with our team, we've got a lot of room for movement, so it's really good with that. So yeah, there's a bunch of girls that can kind of fill in that role.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it's gonna be a very deep roster for Sydney this year. And I'll just ask, kind of, there was a couple of players who were coming back from ACL injuries, very unfortunately timed, in Maddie Collier and Hayley Bullis. Do you expect to see much of them playing this year? I haven't heard a lot of preseason information. Very curious to know. Hayley Bullis is also someone we've interviewed for the podcast before.
Yeah, I think both those girls, like, to come back from an ACL missing, like, you know, all of last season and how hard they worked. And then Mads actually did play some of the VFL, which was good. And then Hayley's now training and playing some of the, like, the scrimmages that we have. So it's really good, those girls that are full back into the swing of it. And, like, to see what they can do is so exciting. Like, I think they're both such great players. And, yeah, I'd expect to see, you know, them play. And it's just really exciting that, you know, you can have players that are out for the whole season and then they come back and have such an impact. And I think especially from an injury like that, to gain your confidence again, it's really exciting to see what they can do.
Yeah. And specifically for Maddie, do you have any indication on where what position she might be leaning more towards? I know that she's been a utility across her career.
Yeah, she is a utility. You can pretty much put Mads anywhere, down back, on the wing, you know, even up forward. Like, she's so quick. Like, it's, you know, she pretty much goes everywhere. We always are moving her around, and I think that's such a special thing for her to have, because, you know, if you ever need someone to do a job, like, she will get it done. She's so determined, and she's, yeah, such a great player. So, yeah.
Well, that is going to be very exciting to watch. And again, it really speaks to the depth that Sydney has. And as a Bomber supporter, I'm extremely envious of the way that Sydney are going to be lining up this year. So I've gone through almost all the questions. I've got one left, and it's one that we ask every person that we interview. It's, if you had to pick one player that you think is the kind of most exciting, most likely to wow, improve this season, who would it be?
Yeah, I would probably say it's, obviously, there's so many girls that I'd say have improved. I think
you're more than welcome to give
When you kind of get to that kind of 3 years in, and you've had girls that have been a part of this, like, the Swans team for those three seasons, you kind of start to see them kind of, you know, cement the spot, their spot, and kind of get into the groove of things. So I think if I'm probably picking a couple of players, I'd probably say those girls, like, you know, Monham, Soph Hurley, and Cynthia Hamilton, who have now, you know, they've been here for three seasons and they're starting to show leadership, you know, and their confidence has improved. And I think they're really stepping up on the, like, on the field at training and even in that pre-series that we did, which is really good. So I'm pretty excited to be a part of them on the field, and yeah, I can't wait to start the season round one. So yeah,
that's amazing that they're all players that fantasy coaches are interested to hear can do well this year. So amazing news from our end, and so that ends the interview. Laura, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Hopefully you and Sydney have a great season this year, and you can eclipse the heights you reached last year.
Yeah, thank you, appreciate it.
Wow, that was fantastic stuff. Mm-hmm. And you could tell Liam was stoked to talk about Sydney and his absolute idol, Laura Gardner.
Yeah, she was so chatty. That was such a good interview.
And I think that's a really great way that we can jump straight into our top five fantasy players, because it really can't be anyone other than Laura Gardner at number one.
It really can't. So, Laura Gardner, I mean, she's midfielder. She averaged 115 last season, which is crazy. She is also the fourth most expensive player. So her positioning coming into this season is she is a premium mid-pricer. Oh, sorry, premium midfielder. She was listed as a forward last season, so her value was undeniable. But even listed as a midfielder now, it's just as good. Like, she's someone that you can slot into your M1. She's got the 150-point ceiling against the would-be premiers with Brisbane, but she's also shown that she can score really well against some of the weaker teams, like getting 134 against the Bulldogs. So she's up there as, like, you're tossing up your Marinoffs, your Garner, your Riddells of who's going to be M1, where you're going to spend the money. And I reckon that of those options, Laura Gardner is probably one of the best because we kind of know what we're going to see from some of the other primos. They've been pretty established that have those high averages for a few seasons now. But Laura's coming into her second season at Sydney and in this role. And she's still quite young, so she's got room to grow. I reckon she could be someone that's challenging Noffy for that high average by the end of the season. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think one of the things that often happens with players who go from being forwards or defenders into just being pure midfielders is a lot of people sort of forget about them. They kind of think, oh, I don't get the value of them being in the other role anymore. Laura Gardner's a superstar. She just knows how to get the ball. And I think she'll be a bit more unique than she probably should be. I think as the fourth most expensive player and the fourth highest average, she's still going to be picked quite a bit. But I think a lot of people will probably go, oh, I'll go for Noffy and then maybe drop down another tier to try and get a bit of value. But I think Laura Gardner's a player that if you're not going to go from Ebony Marinoff, because this is a conversation we'll definitely have to have in the similar do you Bowers or not Bowers, it's now going to be do you Marinoff or not Marinoff. I think Laura Gardner's a player that if you were willing to take a structural risk, you could put her as your M1, your set and forget captain, and save a bit of money pretty comfortably. So I think that she's a really good option. Very rarely going to cop a tag as well. Teams seem to be more interested in tagging Chloe Malloy, who we know is that sort of more damaging player going forward, with Gardner being more the accumulator who gets it out to these players. So I think she's a very safe option and one that if you aren't considering, you probably should.
Yeah, and I actually think she's going to be more highly picked and less risky of an option than you've made her out to be. Because when we look at Noffy, like, Hatchard is a nice additional pick because sometimes Noffy gets the tag, but Noffy still just does amazing things anyway. But I love that the tag is probably going to go to Malloy. It gives that opening. And yeah, I just think that she's got the most room to grow above her average.
I would like to say that I do not think Laura Gardner's pick is risky in any way. The risk is not picking Marinoff and going for Gardner instead.
That's true. That's a good distinction.
But either way, I think Laura Gardner is definitely in the conversation to be the highest averaging player, if not Marinoff, and she's going to average 100 to 110 easily, and whatever is above that is just bonus. So probably not the best value pick, as we often talk about, but as a set and forget option who you know is going to score you 100 every week as a captain, great option.
Yep.
And that's kind of where the certainty disappears. And the next lot is a bit more speculative because a lot of the players that we talk about as great fantasy options became really good fantasy options last year and had breakouts last year. So now we're looking for a bit of value.
Yeah. So the next couple of picks are all great options because they're a bit cheaper, but yeah, like you said, their real growth was last season. So I've got in number two, Cynthia Hamilton, who's listed as a forward priced at 48. Last season, which was her second season, most of her fantasy points came from scoring goals as she was playing quite forward. But we've heard from Laura that she's one to watch that she's been training with in the midfield. So that gives me some hope. And we do love to see a forward running through the midfield. In the VFLW, she played 5 games. Not that I watched any of them, but 3 of them she was listed on team sheet as a mid. And while she was a bit light on the tackles, we saw her pull up some pretty decent fantasy scores between high 50s and high 70s with quite a few kicks, quite a few movement around the ball there. So that's making me think that she could be someone that we jump on as a bit of a mid-price madness forward playing as a mid, but it's a big question about where it could fit in with your team structure, depending how kind of primos and rookies you're going. But if you're looking for a bit of a mid-price madness pick, I reckon she's a great one.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one because, as you say, like, she's got so much talent and we know that she's going to be a staple of that Sydney team, whether it is as a forward or in the midfield. We just haven't quite seen that high-scoring pedigree yet. And training with the midfield's super exciting, but it is going to be a bit of a risky one because I can't remember what she averaged last season, about 48, I think you said.
Yeah.
There's a really big chance that that bump up with the midfield is like, oh, she gets a few more possessions and stuff, but loses a bit of goals.
Yeah, it doesn't supplement the goals.
Maybe scores about a 55-60, which is good, but for a player of that sort of price is a bit awkward. So it is a risk, but in terms of, you know, young players that you're looking at to improve, I think she's a good option nonetheless.
Yeah, I think the value comes where if you can get a forward price at 48 who then pumps out high 70s, that's a pretty good jump that you want.
Even 60s, I think, is good enough. But she has to press that 60 barrier, I think, to become really worth it. Because you probably, if you want value, you need to go up, I reckon, at least 10 points is kind of how I look at it. And I think
that, especially if you're coming in mid-priced.
Exactly. Definitely possible for Cynthia Hamilton. And as a forward, you're probably a bit more forgiving. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that forward role goes. And it might be one that people jump on after the preseason or after the first game where we see, yep, this role's pretty legit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, my third pick is much along the same lines.
Yeah. For those who are wondering about that slight pause, Mel had a deep thinking face on. So, but yes, your next one is another cheaper forward.
And my thinking face was just remembering I'm so bad with name pronunciations, and I was like, Beraldson. Which is what was going through my head, being like, don't get that wrong. Anyway, number three, I've got Montana Beraldson, who's a forward coming in basement price. I guess the reason why she's an interesting option is because we have a question around who's going to take Alicia Newman's position as the kind of speedy small forward. And hearing her name from the Laura interview kind of got me started looking at her as an option. We saw her play a full season of the VFLW in the midfield, which is great to see, where she actually got some decent scores, especially towards the end of the season, pumping out a 79 and an 85. And this included scores, this was including points from across the board. It was tackles, kicks, hand passes, and also a couple of goals. So it really gives me confidence that she can bring fantasy scoring into the AFLW with points across the lines. And even if she doesn't bring up to that 70, you know, high 70s, a low 80s that she saw in VFLW, that's a lot higher than her price stat right now of basement. So I think she could be a good cash gen option, but she's one to watch in the bracky games, see if she's starting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things about it is we've seen her scores at AFLW level have probably been not really anything to write home about. She scored a decent 49 against the Bulldogs last year, so against a fairly weak team. Other than that, hadn't pushed above a 30, so we will want to see that development. But at the price that she is, she really slots in alongside some of the other rookies. The only other thing that I do think is Liam's voice in my ear saying, small forward role. You don't want to play her in a small forward role. But if she is a staple of that side, I think that it's definitely one to look at because she is coming into, you know, a new season as a bit more experienced player. She's 25, so she's not, you know, a teenager struggling to fit in with the side and things like that. So definitely one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think the reason I have her as like a cash gen option is because of that small forward role. Like Alicia Newman leaving, she didn't leave a great fantasy role behind there. So if she takes it, it means she could be someone that starts, gets games early behind her, but I don't think she's going to be one that's breaking the barriers for the whole season.
Yeah, that's probably my take as well. In terms of number four, you've got a player who we all know is a very, very good talent and slots into that mid-price madness where if she can hit the value that we want, could be really, really good early pick.
Yep, and it's Sophia Hurley. So midfielder priced at 70. We saw her have an absolutely massive second season last year. She took her average from 44 in season 7 to 73 in season 8, which included ending on 113 in the elimination final. So absolutely crazy scores there. And good thing for us, that 113 isn't actually baked into her average. So we know that if she can, like, she's got the ceiling and she's coming in a little bit lower because of the way the averages work there. The reason why she could be a mid-price madness option, though, is because her scoring's been pretty peaky. That does help her come in with a bit of a lower average, like a 70, but it means that if you're looking for a breakout option, she could be causing you a bit of pain week on week. It's a bit of see how it goes. She is an interesting option, though, because we saw her get 128 in the VFLW, which is a huge game, 16 kicks. So she's got the talent. She's got the kind of role, at least in the VFLW. If she can be bringing that in, coming in fit, ready to go, could be a great, like, kind of breakout, as much of a breakout as we can hope to see from Sydney, given that all of the breakouts seem to have been last year. But yeah, it's another kind of watch with some of these other ones, just to see where they line up in the starting squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things, like you say, talk about peaky. Between rounds 4 and the elimination final, she scored a 92, 109, 101, and 113. All massive scores.
Yeah, I love that.
Every other score between 61 and 63. That's 5 scores, all within 2 points in that 60 range.
Yeah.
So basically what we're looking for here is if she can move those games into the higher bracket that we know she can score, she's 100 averaging mid.
Yep.
And she's got the talent. She was a high draft pick. We've seen the ability to do it. If she does that, she can boost her average up above 90. That's a great mid-pricer.
Mm-hmm.
If she doesn't, she's averaging probably at best 70, and you're basically just stuck with her. But I really rate Sophia Hurley, and she's a player that I'm not sure I'd start with her, but she's in considerations, especially depending on how that preseason goes. Because I think that Sydney's midfield is quite an interesting one. They've got quite a few players that can run through there.
Mm.
But I think their ideal setup is probably Hurley and Gardner for sure, with another player running through such as a Malloy or a Montana Ham, who we might talk about a bit more later. But I think that Hurley and Gardner are probably their two main ones. And I'm not sure what her CBAs were last year, Hurley, but I think she is a player that they would want in there.
Yeah, she only had 22% on average CBAs last season. That does include a max of 56, but then there's quite a lot of zeros going on in there. So up and down.
She's a player that if I was Scott Gowans, I would want in that midfield. Mm. What round was her highest CBAs?
Round 1.
Interesting, which was one of her lowest scores.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yep.
Yeah, she was named in the forward pocket, actually, but I think played a bit more up the ground. But Sophia Hurley, super interesting player. For number 5, we've actually finally got a bit more consistency here. This is a player that I'm strongly considering for my team. Who have you got at number 5, Mel?
Yeah, I mean, I could have put Ella Heads here as second, given that she's the only other one that we're talking about with great confidence from what we've seen exactly in this role last season. But I've gone with number 5 just because she's, I don't know, she hurt me a little bit. It's a bit personal last season. So Ella Heads, she's a defender priced at 65. Coming into this season, she's sitting just outside the top 10 averaging defenders. She proved to be a pretty reliable pick last season. She never did anything super exciting or super amazing, but she was nice and consistent back there. And I think coaches that had her might remember trying to trade her out every season, but she never did anything amazing, but she never disappointed. It was hard to justify trading her out once you had her, but reliability is key at the start of the season. So if you're looking for a nice, reliable defender, she was taking the kick-ins for Sydney, like primary kick-in taker, 34 kick-ins over the season with play on. So lots of points there. And we also saw that she racked up a 99 in the semi-finals, which didn't go towards her fantasy score. So she's got a nice ceiling, reliable role. Only thing maybe is, like, if Sydney are coming in even better than last season, the ball might not be back there as much. But if you're looking for a defender to pick that you know is probably going to stay top 10 and is currently priced at top 10, someone that you don't have to worry about trading, then she's your gal.
Yeah, and the thing that I think I really like about Ella Heads is she, as you say, doesn't have a huge ceiling. A 99 is fantastic, scored a couple of 88s as well, but her floor was the thing that's super impressive. She didn't drop below 50 in any game except one where she scored a 48, and that was against Hawthorn. So they like to use her. She gets a lot of kicks. She's a kick mark player, which we love in the defense. At an average of 65, I think she can push 70 next season. I don't think it's necessarily value, but I think that she's a player you could probably be fairly comfortable at your probably D2 or 3 if you're looking for value, and just sit her there the entire season, like a lot of people did in the end, as you say, Mel.
Yep. I think it's understated to have a player that you know you can bring in and you're not going to need to trade out unless something crazy happens, because we're going to have so much chaos with the buy rounds this season. We're going to be doing trades left, right and centre, trying to swap players around. So having someone that you just know you can bring in, they might not do amazing, might not break their average, but at least they'll get their average. Yeah. Boring, but good value.
I agree. We've got the host special coming up now, which is going to be going back to Specky.
I was going to say, yeah. Hit us with your Specky.
Yeah, I had a long, hard think about this, and it felt a little bit strange to pick a former number one pick as a Specky pick. But Montana Ham is the player I've gone for the special. We know how good Montana Ham can be. Unfortunately, has had an injury-interrupted couple of seasons. And is coming in at a 48 priced midfielder. So she's a bit lower down in terms of the pricing compared to, say, a Sophia Hurley, and doesn't really have the ceiling that we've seen at AFLW level yet, partially because she's played pretty much everywhere on the park just while they get her sort of back to fitness, I suppose. And I think a lot of coaches are probably sitting out there going, when are we going to see Montana Ham explode into the player that we know she can be? Because coming into Sydney as a number one draft pick, we knew she was a big, strong midfielder who could rack up the ball, take marks, do everything. Yep. Is this the year? I think that the preseason, like always, is going to be critical here. If she is getting those midfield minutes, if that midfield become something like a Gardner Montana Hurley or even a Gardner Montana Ham and pretty much anyone really. If she's in there, I think you've got plenty of upside there. I think she can very easily average 60, and I think that we know she's talented enough to really push up higher. Her highest AFLW score so far is an 81, which is good as a rookie player, but we know that she's good enough to do that more regularly. So I think that there's scope for there to be 20 points of upside here, which means she could be a really good stepping stone player, or she could just be a player that ends up averaging 80 and you have her for most of the season and trade her out for a premium player. I'm not quite sure what that role is going to be at this stage, and the Sydney midfield is dynamic enough that we're not going to know the answer to that until preseason, and possibly not even until partway through the season. But she's an interesting one, I think, for coaches out there who want to do a bit of mid-price madness and want to bank on a talent that we know can average more than 48.
Love it. I like how our recs for Sydney have been primo, a whole lot of mid-price madness, and then reliable.
Another mid-price madness. There are two other names that I just want to quickly talk about before we wrap up. The first one is one of our inaugural season friends of the pod, Hayley Bullis, who's returning from an ACL injury. Going to be another basement price midfielder who could become another player that comes into that Sydney team. At 340 might be just above the price you'd be looking for, given I think there'll be probably other genuine bottom priced rookie players that you can look at probably from the draft, but just wanted to give her a shout out because she's a friend of the pod. And the other one is Ellie Morfitt, my player from last year. The difference, a lot of people have asked a lot about Ellie Morfitt, and we've talked a bit about her previously. It's an interesting one because we know how talented she is. She finished the year with a bit of an injury concern, and I think that she's a fairly safe pick to be a top five ruck once again. However, in terms of the value, I'm not sure how much higher she can get. She's already going to be priced an average of 88, which is elite for a ruck.
And the most expensive.
she is the most expensive ruck. I think that I would probably be more comfortable waiting for a dip, because one poor game would see her drop a fair bit of money. And you might, we know there's not going to be a huge amount of rookie rucks going around this season, but she's a player that you might go, I'll start with a slightly cheaper one and a rookie, and I can turn them into Ali Morford in round three or whatever, especially coming up to the buy rounds when we know she's got that pretty handy buy early on. So Ali Morford is quite an interesting one. I don't begrudge anyone who starts with her, though, because I do love Ali Morford as a pick.
Yeah, it's kind of giving me like Kiara Bowers vibes from previous seasons, where you go, this is an incredibly expensive player. Can I just wait to see if she can back up her high average that she's coming into the season with and grab her then? Or do I need to start with her? And the downside for Morford is because she's a ruck, there's only one of that position. There's a lot of other options. So, I see that the only way for her from here is down, given that incredibly high average. But then once she loses 5-10 points on her average, potentially for doing a phenomenal, like getting great scores, being a fantastic ruck, but that's just she's almost set up to fail with that seriously high average. So
yeah, I think you're right. I think she's very comfortably probably going to be able to average 80 once again, but that's enough to almost beat a 10-point drop. And that's a fair bit of money that you're putting into a spot, as you say, Mel, where we traditionally haven't really spent up. I'm pretty sure we've done three seasons of this, and I don't know if any of us have ever started a premium ruck.
And we talk a lot about doing it, and then we don't.
We always talk about it. This could be the year. I doubt it will be. Ali Morford, sensational player. Is that massive average going to be maintained? I'm not sure it will be. But she's definitely a player that I think a lot of people possibly will have by the end of the season. By trading up to her, because I think she'll definitely be in that top five to possibly top three, if not the highest ruck by the end of the season.
Yeah, and because she's the less consistent of the more expensive rucks, she's more likely to have a big drop and then everyone jumps on her rather than some of the other primos who are more consistent. Sorry, I'll stop talking on and on about Ali Morford.
That's all right.
It's already a long episode.
That's all right. That concludes our Ali Morford episode for the day. but yeah, that's Sydney. Super exciting team. Keep an eye out. The best 21 is up on our social medias now. You can follow us at FreeKickWPod. I've been Will. You've been Mel.
Mel.
And thank you very much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.